Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled A Mindful Day's Work and Reward by Lama Adam Berner. Lama Adam explores ways in which we can support our practice of mindfulness in the course of a single day with a focus on building strong, positive habits. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to Dharma Talks at Columbus KTC. It's a Sunday tradition. Thank you for being here. An hour is a long time. It's a big chunk of your day. So I feel a lot of responsibility to try to give you something useful. And I hope I can do that. So thank you for being here. I think it's good right at the top to take a minute to rejoice a little bit in the fact that we are all here at all, but also the idea that like we're inclined to be here, that we're inclined to come and try to think about how to improve, you know, how to realize our potential. And that's really the underlying view of all of this, is that we have this potential that we can tap. And it's here. It's ours already. So how do we uncover it? And the fact that we're even here thinking about this stuff is meaningful and has value. And something led to this. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. You know, short answer, doing virtuous things led to us being here today, you know, hoping to do more virtuous things. So I think it's important to recognize that and rejoice in it a little bit, because being here today is caused by this type of stuff, you know, so we have to kind of draw a line between causes and conditions sometimes so that we remember. So thank you for being here. Pat yourself on the back. And then I hope that what we talk about today, you'll be able to put into use during the week for the rest of the time where we're not here together. So let's begin. We usually start with the four-line refuge prayer. I'll put that on the screen. We'll say this once in English, once in Tibetan, and then once more in English. And what we're doing when we recite this prayer is setting an intention to seek refuge, to seek protection in authentic sources, particularly the Buddha as the teacher, the Dharma as the teachings, and the Sangha as the community that can support us on this path. And then we're also recognizing our bodhisattva aspiration, our wish to benefit, to awaken for the benefit of all sentient beings. And we do this when we say that we want to awaken. May I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. That's the aspiration portion of our bodhisattva aspiration. And then the other part is the action portion. And that's what we say when we say through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections. The six perfections is probably a whole other Dharma talk, but we're talking about generosity. We're talking about ethics and patience and diligence and meditation and wisdom. And those are the ways that we can in action enact our bodhisattva vow, our bodhisattva, our wish to awaken for the benefit of beings. So we're going to say this prayer again, once in English, once in Tibetan, once in English. If you know it, feel free to chant along. You can see the English on the screen, of course, too. If not, just make the aspiration that this time today is a benefit to you and to other beings. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and the Noble Sangha. Through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Sanje Chidan Suki Chodnam La Chanchu Padu Dakni Kyapsuchi Aki Jin Suki Pe Sunam Ki Drola Penche Sangye Drupasho. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and the Noble Sangha. Through the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I'm just realizing that what's blocking my view of the refuge prayer is probably blocking yours too. There it is. I'll get that next time. So I have one short prayer of my own to say, and then we'll begin.
바덴 사웨 라마 림포체 다기 지워 페데 덴주라 카드린 젠보고네 제순데 구순드 킹어 줍사두 소
Okay, thank you. Get my screen organized here. Okay. So today's talk is titled Mindful Days, Work and Reward. And so what I set out wanting to talk about was kind of all the ways that we could support our practice of mindfulness in the course of any given day. Like any talk that I've started to organize, I realized somewhere along the way that there's a piece or a thread that is much more of the story than I had originally maybe anticipated. So second half of this talk is going to be what I originally kind of set out for. And it's going to be a little listy, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a, I'm going to kind of throw a lot of stuff at you. So I think maybe the best way to take the second half of this talk, you know, what we can do in the course of a single day to enhance our mindfulness practice, is maybe have a pad and paper handy, you know, and write down some stuff that resonates for you, because it won't all be up your alley. And some things may particularly resonate for you. So I would recommend having something handy, because you may hear some ideas you haven't had or something you haven't heard in a long time that can be useful for you. So that'll be the second half. But to start, I just kind of want to talk about mindfulness, like that word. For me, it's a little overplayed, unfortunately, because it's so ingrained in culture right now and in so many different ways that aren't all the same as we talk about it in Buddhism. So I think it deserves a little description, you know, what we're talking about when we say that word, to clarify. So we're not going to talk in this hour too much about your formal on the cushion meditation practice, your formal on the cushion mindfulness. Ideally, you're working with a teacher and have received some kind of guidance in what practices are appropriate for you and how they should be applied. For most people, it starts with some kind of training in mindfulness. And in Buddhist terms, that would mean some sort of shamatha practice, otherwise known as calm abiding or tranquility meditation. And if you have not learned this practice, you can join us any Sunday at 10 a.m. We have our Intro to Meditation class, which is kind of our flagship offering at Columbus KTC. It's free introduction to meditation. You can learn everything you need to know to begin this practice every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Join us if this is something you're not familiar with. All are welcome. It's not necessary to be Buddhist to practice shamatha. And the only belief that's required is, like what I mentioned a little earlier, having a recognition of our as yet unrealized potential, and that belief that we can uncover it through becoming more familiar with our minds. And familiarizing is really what we're talking about when we talk about meditation, becoming more familiar with our minds, getting to know ourselves better, understanding how thoughts arise, what happens when they do, how they dissipate, go away. So it's a really important practice, shamatha. So if it's something you haven't been exposed to, I highly recommend it. And so this form of meditation, shamatha, or calm abiding, is the foundation of all other Buddhist meditations, because it cultivates two essential faculties. It cultivates mindfulness, and it also cultivates alertness. And the word, the Tibetan word translated here as alertness, is actually the same word as awareness. So in this context, mindfulness means remembering to apply the technique, or we could say like remembering to do what you set out to do. And awareness means noticing when you've forgotten. So remembering to apply the technique is mindfulness. We can also restate that as steadily placing your attention, or again, remembering to do what you set out to do. And then alertness is like a sentinel that's keeping watch. It recognizes everything in our field of existence and notices when we're no longer doing what we set out to do. So mindfulness is remembering to do what we set out to do. And alertness is noticing when we've forgotten. So these two, mindfulness and alertness, or mindfulness and awareness, depend on each other. And it's because of one that the other is possible. Because we know what we're trying to do, we have the ability to notice when we're not. And because we notice when we're not doing what we set out to do, we're able to come back, to return to our goal and do what we set out to do. So mindfulness is attention to something. It's like the granular approach, specificity. For example, what specific detail am I placing my attention on? Whereas alertness has this open quality to it. Alertness takes it all in, keeps an eye on everything so that we can see our attention, our mindfulness, in the context of the whole of our experience. And it's that quality of openness, that element of awareness, that allows us to notice where our attention is, whether it remains where we put it or whether it's gone off somewhere else, as it's wont to do. So mindfulness, the specificity, is honed in partnership with alertness or awareness, which is open. And when we cultivate the ability to place our attention in one place, this enhances our ability to take in the entirety of things. And likewise, cultivating our awareness of everything enhances our ability to place our attention effectively on what we choose, rather than being carried away by each passing detail. So these two faculties of mindfulness and awareness are essential to meditation because they are so crucial in our daily life. Think about how our lives, what we call me or I, think about how that entire experience is actually made up of a string of little moments. Little moments that we seem to experience only one at a time. And those little moments are filled with big, often consequential possibilities. Moments where we're either doing what we set out to do or where we've forgotten what we set out to do. We're either thinking or doing things that align with our goals or we're not. And when we're in a moment of forgetting what we set out to do, what our goals are, there's a decent chance that we may actively end up undermining our goals in a moment of forgetfulness. And this is basically undermining who we wish to be. So sure, it may only be a little bit, but maybe we could also blow a whole objective up. It's happened, right? I'm sure we've all been in that situation. A moment of unmindfulness can sometimes destroy a lot of hard work and intention. Not always, probably not even most of the time, but they can. So the results of these moments of forgetfulness, of being unmindful, can run the gamut, depending on the circumstances, of course. But regardless, what is certain is that those moments add up. And as they do, moments of unmindfulness reinforce habitual tendencies towards unmindfulness and create new tendencies towards unmindfulness. They accumulate, they build up on each other because the sum of our moments is our experience. Our experience is the sum of all the moments we have. So our sense of who we are in the world arises through this accumulation of tiny moments, moments in which we're being mindful or we're not. So another way to describe this is that in any given moment, we're either acting mindfully with awareness or acting unmindfully, acting with ignorance. We've been habitually defaulting towards ignorance for a long time. But the good news is that we have an opportunity to begin to turn the tide away from ignorance and towards awareness. And that opportunity is there with every moment. It's never gone. It's always there. Every moment when we act mindfully, when we're able to place our attention where we want it and act accordingly, we interrupt the habit of unmindfulness of acting out of ignorance rather than awareness. And not only do we interrupt the habit of unmindfulness, but in the process, we're undoing the habit of unmindfulness, chipping away at it by cultivating the habit of mindfulness, the habit of acting with awareness, acting with awareness, with wisdom, rather than ignorance. So this is actually an incredibly hopeful story. It's a little daunting, I think, to kind of recognize all the moments of unmindfulness we may experience in any given day. But every single moment of mindfulness carries a little reward of wisdom, of sanity, as well as contributing to a more natural arising of mindfulness in the next moment. When we are mindful in one moment, it's much easier to be mindful in the next. And this is why mindfulness is only really effective when it's brought to bear in every part of our life, all day long. From the cushion, to the easy chair, to the grocery, to the workplace, to the commute, wherever you are. If you've been able to establish a consistent daily practice of mindfulness, you probably already know how much even just a little bit can have an incredibly positive impact on your experience. The positive effects of mindfulness can almost seem disproportionately big compared to what's really required of us to practice. And that's really good news that it's worth rejoicing in. We already know what it's like to act unmindfully. So hearing what I'm saying today shouldn't be that we've acted unmindfully most of our lives. The good news here is that with each mindful moment that we add to our day, we build awareness. We clear away a little bit more ignorance. And each time we do that, we make it easier to repeat that. So we create and reinforce tendencies of mindfulness and awareness. And therefore, we reveal our natural inclination towards wisdom and skillful means. Now, a crucial distinction I want to point out is this. When you notice that you've not been acting mindfully, that is your awareness. That's what noticed that it's time to come back to what you set out to do. And that's good. That's a good thing. This is a common mistake we all make. The unmindfulness you recognized is not particularly good, but we're not only trying to cultivate mindfulness. We must cultivate both the faculties of mindfulness and awareness. These two work together. So when you notice that you've not been mindful, as we all do, that's a cause for rejoicing and a sign that your practice is improving. It's okay to regret your unmindfulness, and in fact, you should, but that's only useful if it also comes with a resolution not to repeat it, to do something different next time, to be mindful going forward. Will that be an easy resolution to carry out 100% of the time? Of course not. No. But we need to make the resolution to set our intention, to explicitly acknowledge the framework of what we know will work for us, what will lead to real happiness and real success. So it's always better to make a resolution, even if you can't keep it. You kind of need some basis for this stuff. So rather than saying, I'm not going to resolve to do that because I might not be able to do it, which is basically saying I'm not going to do it, you make the resolution to do it, and if you fall short, you regret it, you reinforce that resolution. You're setting a direction, and you're embarking on it. So it's a little tricky because our mindfulness, as our mindfulness and our awareness increase, they become more sensitive and accurate. It's inevitable that we'll become more aware of our missteps, our mistakes, and our moments of unmindfulness will stand out to us more often and more clearly. I'm telling you this because part of the path towards realizing our full potential, our Buddha nature, is to become more and more aware of increasingly subtle divergences from mindfulness. This is how growing awareness looks. And it's okay. It's a little jarring sometimes, but it's okay. It's important to know this because it allows us to maintain a middle way approach, a balance. We're trying to do our best, but we will fall short until we're fully enlightened. We have a goal, and we also have the reality of what we're capable of in any given moment. And we have to respect both of these things, our ideal and our capabilities. So when our awareness is working for us and we recognize moments of falling short, being aware of when we have not been mindful, that's a necessary part of our progress. It's not a cause for self-denigration. Unmindfulness is nothing to rejoice in, but noticing unmindfulness is. As long as when we recognize a moment of unmindfulness, we then course correct back to mindfulness. Through recognizing and regretting our departure from mindfulness and resolving not to do it again, this is corrected. So in life, just like in the formal practice of shamatha, we're going to alternate between periods of mindfulness in periods of distraction. We try our best to extend the periods of mindfulness and reduce the periods of distraction. But that's only possible because of the faculties of mindfulness and awareness. By honing the two of them together, we're able to begin to create positive tendencies of thought and action. So working with habitual tendencies, working with repetition, is working with our karma. If we want to improve our karma and experience better outcomes, mindfulness gives us tremendous power to do so. Why is that? We can think of karma in terms of habitual tendencies, the increasing ease with which we do the thing we've done before, or the feeling of a challenge, almost like resistance, when we try to switch it up and do something different than we've done before. I'm thinking about those plastic chair mats at your job. I'm thinking of one that I had at my last desk job. And it was, I remember getting it brand new, and it was so like, it was a thick, firm, hard plastic, but still, you know, like 2 weeks into having it or something, it started to get these divots where the wheels for the chair go, you know? You don't want to have the wheels right where your feet go, right? So you put that one wheel kind of in the front. And then it just started to make these divots. So I would go to scoot the chair in, and the wheels would kind of sink into the little divots where they were before. And if I wanted to get out of those divots, it was a little harder than just being on flat ground. I had to push a little harder to get out of that divot, you know? And that's not unlike habitual tendencies that we create for ourselves. So when we make the strongest habits, the strongest karmas. Karma, by the way, means action, but we're talking about action in the broadest, really kind of the most sane sense, in the idea of like the entirety of it, not just what's done, but what it leads to as well. So the strongest habits, the strongest karmas have four steps that sort of align. And those are the intention, starting the action, completing the action, and then rejoicing in it. So when we intend to do something, we begin doing it, carry it through to completion, and then we rejoice in what we've done, that will make the strongest imprint. That's an important formula to remember, particularly for what we're going to talk about today. So when you intend to do something, you begin to do it, you finish doing it, and then you rejoice in it, that sort of seals the strongest karmic imprint. But any place in that sequence, we could change our minds. So for example, we could decide that we're going to donate a week's salary to the YWCA Family Center. And it's a noble intention, for sure. And so we could set out to do it. We go down there to make the donation. We make the donation, and then we rejoice in doing it. And that's going to be the strongest positive karma. But maybe we really can't afford to donate a whole week's salary to the YWCA Family Center. So we make the intention, we go down there to do it, we complete making the donation, And then we feel bad that we did it. Shouldn't have done that. You know, that regret will lessen the impact of that positive karma. So another example might be like, I think something we all do is probably like a imagination game of intentions, you know, like someday I'm going to give so much money to such and such, you know, and we kind of think we're going to do that and we have the intention, but we never actually begin to do it. And we kind of ride on that feeling of wanting to do it, you know. There's some goodness in that, but we haven't done the other three steps that are really important to sealing that karma. And if anything, we may be just kind of making a habit of intending to do something and not actually carrying it through. So another way to think of this four component kind of karma thing is if we have a bad intention. And so let's say we're angry and we decide we want to hurt somebody, you know, and we start to do that and we carry it out, but then we generate a good deal of regret for having done it. That regret will help, you know, it will lessen the impact of that negative karma. But we have to always, like I said earlier, we have to resolve not to do it again. So that regret is only really most powerful when we can make a resolution to not repeat that behavior. We have to reset our intention as the basis of the karma we're trying to create. So I think this is important to remember, this idea of intention, beginning, completing, and rejoicing, because it does relate to our intention for mindfulness. You know, if we start to carry it out, you know, if we make the intention to be mindful, we start to carry it out, but we're unable to maintain it, then we can regret not being able to maintain it. And we still have three of the four elements of a positive karma there. We've laid down three parts of what we were hoping for, you know, like we intended to do it, we started doing it, and although we weren't able to finish it, we are, you know, afterwards, that aligns with where we started. So the way we felt about not finishing it is we regretted it and we make the resolution to actually be able to carry it through the next time. And this is important because though we still experience moments of unmindfulness, forgetfulness, until the moment of our full awakening, if we intend to be mindful, we begin to try to be mindful and then we regret, but we have not retained that mindfulness. You know, that's still building a strong habit towards mindfulness. It's still working in that direction. And we can't forget that. And it's working with who we are and what we're capable of right now. One further clarification before we begin looking at some ideas for a single day of mindfulness. Where we are now is undoubtedly the result of previous actions, previous karma. But we have to never forget that we always have to be mindful of the fact that the future is open. It's not preordained and it's determined by our thoughts and actions right now. So the choices we make in this moment, in any given moment, have a tremendous effect on our tendencies and therefore our experience going forward. And that's why we can say that our current situation, whatever that situation is, can be most fruitful for us when we approach it with mindfulness and awareness. So aside from our formal practice on the cushion, how can we enhance our mindfulness and awareness throughout the course of a day? We can practice simple forms of shamatha in many different circumstances. I'm talking about off the cushion. We'll talk about how to do some of those things with like emotions and physical sensations too. But when we're moving around in conversations, working on problem-solving tasks at work, et cetera, it's not really possible to do, you know, a strict practice of shamatha. There's just too many things that need our attention at once, and we have to engage concepts, you know, and stories in the course of culture in our lives. So we need to have some kind of general support throughout our day. And that general support can be like an aspiration and an intention. So depending on where we are in our practice, that might be the intention to attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Or it might be the three commitments: do no harm, practice only virtue, tame your mind. Or maybe it's simply an intention not to bring any additional suffering upon ourselves. Any of those things is a good guiding intention, you know, to be mindful of throughout our day. It can be a good general support for your mindfulness as you move through the myriad situations that you encounter in a day in interpersonal interactions. So thinking about like a specific day, first of all, let's start right from the beginning. So that moment when you hear your alarm, or if you're a lucky kind of person who wakes up without an alarm, there's that sort of groggy moment, you're coming out of a dream. And I think for a lot of us, I can only speak from my own experience, but that moment is usually kind of dominated for me by the idea that I could still stay sleeping if I wanted to. I knew I wanted to get up at a certain time and I planned for that. But every day I let myself have a little debate in my head and frequently don't do what I really set out to do, which was get up at that time, you know? So I think that that first moment of the day can be really crucial and can actually have a great reward when we do follow through with what we set out to do. So if we set a time to get up and that alarm goes off, what are we going to do? Are we going to stick with our intentions? Are we going to, you know, push through and do it, do what we wanted to do, even if it's not the easiest thing? Or are we going to go back to sleep? And I think in this moment, the traditional instruction is if you can, immediately the first thing you can think of your teacher, think of the Buddha. You know, think of, and another way of saying that is think of your potential. Think of what you can be, you know. And make that the focus of what you're doing right from the beginning. So in that moment, if you do think of the Buddha, that can be a helpful motivator to use that moment mindfully. You know, the first step of your day is mindful. You know, I'm not going to give in to over comfort. You know, I'm not going to give in to selfishness and go right back to sleep. I'm going to actually do what I set out to do and get up. And so a good way to do that is to immediately try to call to mind the Buddha. And then once you kind of make that, and we're still in bed here. So like this is before we've even stepped out of bed, the next thing you might want to do is take a moment and think about the dream that you were just having. You know, they're usually still pretty fresh in the morning. And one thing that can help set the tone for the day is to begin to think about how you were in that dream, how we know that that was a dream. It was a dream. It was not reality as we take it to be in waking life, but you still reacted like it was. Unless you're a proficient lucid dreamer, you probably were reacting with negative emotions and attachment, same kind of things that we do throughout our normal day. But you were reacting that way in a purely mental experience, you know, in your dream. And it's good to think about this because when you do get up and move into our daily life, the idea is that our experience of our waking life is also not as real as we think it is, or at least it's not real in the ways that we think it is. It is impermanent. Our experience is impermanent. Our experience is interdependent. Our experience is heavily colored by our own stories. So there's a lot about the way we experience our waking life, which isn't quite like we think it is. And so a good way to kick off your mindfulness in the morning too, is to kind of remember that and think about that first thing in the morning in terms of the dream you were just having, and thinking that my experience during the day is not that different from that. And another way to think about that, that may be a little tricky to understand, but, Pema Chodron uses this great, phrase. It's actually a Lojong slogan that she translates, or maybe Trungpa translated as, every moment is a passing memory. I love that one, because when you think about it, like that this life sort of is a dream. Even in the, you know, as soon as the, you know, a moment has passed, it's how is that different from a dream we had, you know? So that's kind of another way to think about that. Sort of remember that every moment is a passing memory, just like the dreams, the memories of your dreams. And then, so now you're ready to kick that one leg off the bed and get up. We can do that with purpose. You know, we can hit that first step out of bed with intention. We can be grateful that we have another day at all and that we can get up and go into a new day. Not everyone has that option, you know? So gratitude, joy, and intention to benefit ourselves and others as we get out of bed. Make that what's getting you out of bed, you know? Then moving into your morning routines. This is a great place to say that mantra fits in anywhere, right? So the six-syllable mantra of Chenrezig, Om Mani Padme Hum. That's a great thing to start kind of right away. Why not? You know, kick it in. So immediately you can start saying mantra. Place your attention on the sound of the mantra. It's kind of comforting and soothing in the morning, I think. So that's, we'll come back to mantra. I mean, mantra's great anytime, you know, and it actually means mind protection. So where we might start to get out of bed and immediately start to indulge in our stories and our negative emotions, instead we can protect our minds with some mantra right away. Then usually something that comes pretty quickly for people when they get out of bed is brushing their teeth. And I think a good thing to do with that is to relate the intention to brush your teeth with the intention to do what's beneficial. And what I mean by that is thinking about how, like we brush our teeth, we also meditate. It's good basic hygiene. You know, and this is important to remind ourselves because we forget that, you know? Our tendency is hopefully to joyfully bounce our way to the cushion every morning for our meditation session, but it doesn't always work that way, right? So I'm thinking also of like if we arrive at work and we realize we forgot to brush our teeth. I know I've been in this place before. I rush to find, you know, see if somebody's got some toothpaste. You know, I might stop at the gas station to grab a travel toothbrush or something to get that taken care of, you know. I know I've done that with deodorant before too. You know, if you forget to wear deodorant, you might stop and pick some up, you know. And the reason I bring this up is because as much as hygiene helps us, it also affects others. So just as much as we wouldn't want to experience our own unbrushed mouth, we don't want others to experience that either. And it really ought to be the same with our own unmeditated, unmindful mind, you know? Like if we don't need to experience it, it's not the best thing for us. And we definitely don't want to share it with other people too. So similarly, as we would take care of brushing our teeth, we take care of our meditation. That's basic hygiene for ourselves and for others. Then moving into coffee or tea or whatever your morning pleasure is, you can attempt to be mindful in the process of making it. There are Zen methods of doing this that I'm curious to learn at some point, but there's a process that you can mindfully use when you make your tea. And really what we're talking about is just kind of placing your attention like you would on the breath and shamatha, placing your attention on the process, you know, on the sensations, you know, of moving things around and just taking it in and rather than telling a story, just being with what you're doing. And so a good way to do that is just start with your morning coffee, you know, start with your morning tea. And you can, as you sip it, another thing that you can place attention on is sensations, physical sensations. So taste. And taste is not an easy one. You know, there's a reason why we say start with the breath in shamatha practice, which is that's the easiest way to begin to train in mindfulness. So any of these other methods are not quite as easy, but they're valid and they're worth trying. You know, just be aware that it's not going to be quite as easy as when you're sitting in a posture in a quiet room with your attention on the breath. So for instance, we're talking now about taste. You know, taste, you can experience the taste of your coffee or your tea without thinking about it. You don't have to tell a story about it. It's tricky because when you taste something, you immediately start thinking salty, sweet, comparing it to maybe what you had before. That's where our habit takes us, you know? So just be aware that that's probably going to happen. But those types of stories, those types of concepts are your awareness. When you notice that, that's your awareness telling you, go ahead and just bring your attention back to the experience. You know, bring your attention back to the raw taste, just the taste, the sensation. Again, not super easy, but worth trying. Then at some point in the morning, you're probably going to open your shrine. I don't want to talk too much about formal practice today because we've got a couple other things to get through. But I will just say that it's important, since we do our daily practice daily, it's a lot of repetition. It's easy to kind of do things by rote without really thinking about it. So I think one of the first things I try to do is to recall diligence. And in particular, another way to say diligence is joyous effort. You know, so before we even do our first prostration to begin to open our shrine, feel some joy that we're there to do it. Like I said at the beginning of this talk, like own a little bit of happiness about the fact that we're making the effort to do it, and the privilege that we have to have that inclination and to have access to the teachings and to be able to practice. That type of reinforcement, you know, is what helps to create these strong habits. So that's a good way to start. Second thing, bring all beings with us while we do our prostrations. We can include all beings in what we're doing right from the beginning, you know. So as we do prostrations, we imagine we're leading all beings in prostrations with us. Also think about the meaning of the refuge as we recite, which is what I said a little bit earlier about right sources of refuge. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha. And then the second two parts of that, which are by the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings. So we're thinking about our aspiration to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And we're thinking about how to do that. You know, when we say the six perfections, it's worth, if it's not something you're familiar with, it's worth exploring. But these ideas of generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, which we said is like joyous effort, making effort with joy, meditation and wisdom. So those are the ways that we can do what we're aspiring for. So it's good to think about that when we say the refuge prayer. Also, we can make offerings and try to do that mindfully. And one way to sort of stay engaged and be mindful with your offerings is as you make them, be creative about how you might mentally expand each offering. So for instance, if it's a candle offering or a lamp light, think of some way of maybe even a fresh way of doing it every day. You know, may this lamp clear away the darkness of ignorance for all beings. And may their innate wisdom shine forth like this lamp, you know, with water. Maybe it's may this quench the thirst of all beings. May all their basic needs be met so that they can afford to think about things like their enlightenment, you know, and their potential. So that's a way to mindfully engage with your offerings. When you sit down to do your practice, be mindful of your current state. You know, like, how are you feeling that morning? Are you a little tired? Are you grumpy? All of those things are okay, but we need to be mindful of it. And then set our intention to do that session for the benefit of ourselves and all sentient beings, rejoicing in our ability to do so. And through our practice that day, do what we've been taught in the way we've been taught. Don't make a habit of doing other things in the middle of your session of meditation. That should be part of your intention at the beginning, is for this session, may I just do the practices that I'm setting out to do. And then at the end, we dedicate, which is sort of rejoicing in our good works, and we dedicate the merit of what we've done. And that dedication helps to complete a strong karma. You know, that's sort of the rejoicing, but it also, through the dedication of that merit, it helps us to, it's said that when we don't dedicate our merit, the results of that can be exhausted. When we experience them, they're exhausted. Whereas if we dedicate the merit to the benefit of all sentient beings, that becomes inexhaustible. So that continues to give us positive returns. So that's why it's so important to dedicate. Then when we go to stand up, I think this is a really crucial moment. When we've done the dedication and we're about to stand up, do that mindfully. You know, don't think, okay, it's over now. you know, and now into this whole other part of my life that's completely different from my meditation. What we really want to do is blur the lines between our meditation and our post-meditation. So standing up with mindfulness, you know, being with the sensation of standing up, you know, walking to wherever we go after our practice mindfully, start to carry this into the day. You know, we want to spend the rest of our day ideally supporting our formal practice of meditation, not undoing it. So that's one crucial point right there, is standing up from our meditation. Then let's talk about the commute. So I want to suggest that if you are a practitioner of Tonglen or Lojong, you know, mind training, this is also something, Tonglen, by the way, if you haven't been trained, we teach this class the fifth Sunday of every month. So at this time next week, we'll be teaching Tonglen, taking and sending compassion meditation. So if it's something you're not familiar with, I'll be teaching that this exact same time next Sunday. So check the virtual Shrine Room on columbusktc.org for the link, and come and join us if you'd like to learn. So if you are familiar, though, I'd like to encourage you to start your Tonglen with your car. I mean, you could do it earlier, but I think a good time to think about it is when you're turning that key on that car, be turning the key on your Tonglen too, because you're about to interact with more sentient beings than probably anything else you're going to do all day long. So what an opportunity for your Tonglen. And all those sentient beings you're going to interact with, it's said in Tibetan Buddhism that all of these may have previously been your mother, or in other words, somebody who's shown you great kindness. So you want to be ready to interact and make your driving and your commute align with your intention. You know, so make an aspiration when you start your car to practice the paramitas on your drive, you know, particularly generosity, ethics, patience, and joyous effort. And so be mindful of your motivations, those your motivation to benefit beings, and particularly all of your opportunities to help in the course of a drive. That's a real powerful change that we can all make. I'm not great at it all the time, for sure, but I'm noticing more often, which is that awareness, right? So it occurred to me the other day that it would be a good idea when you're on the road to, and I'm going to coin a term here, be a merge bodhisattva. Be a bodhisattva of merging, you know? Like, everybody's trying to get somewhere. There's no reason why we really need to protect, you know, our territory on the road. We're moving. We're all going somewhere. You can always slow down and let someone in. And it's a great way to be generous. It's a great way to be patient. It's a great way to help other beings. So be a merge bodhisattva. Also, use taking and sending to work with difficult encounters. You know, if you see somebody driving recklessly, or someone cuts you off, or something happens that seems to trigger negative emotions, that's when you start to use taking and sending for that individual. You know, take on their suffering and breathe out happiness for them. Don't get sucked into the negative feelings that can arise on the road. So another thing, what's a good way to protect your mind from negative thoughts? What's mind protection? Mantra, right? So there's another great thing to do in the car. You know, just, you can default to mantra. Then getting to work, set your intentions before you go in. I remember learning about this on my last desk job, and I remember there was some tough times, and it was just pulling into that parking lot was like kind of the hardest part of the day. And it's telling, I think, right? Because it was hard because there were difficult things happening inside the building, but that parking lot was kind of the expectation and the anxiety was kind of the worst. And it wasn't even in there yet, you know, but what helped is setting an intention before you go in. Remember the middle way, you know, and what I mean here is particularly that, like, the traditional way of talking about materialism versus nihilism, that, like, everything that you see and hear matters, you know, or nothing matters at all. Like, remember the middle way between those two. And a way of describing that in terms of behavior is detachment and equanimity. You know, acting with detached, not like ignoring ignorance, but just being a little bit detached from things, not being attached, you know, a little bit of facing things with a little bit of detachment and equanimity, kind of taking things as all things as equal. And this is a great way to approach everything, but particularly difficult situations. Again, there's Tonglen. So don't be afraid to utilize Tonglen throughout your day at work. Super helpful. Also, mantra. And then another method Kenpo Carter Rinpoche has mentioned before is, and I love this one, is utilizing the mental flop. So it's a great thing to do at some point during your day to just take a break. If you got, I mean, obviously you probably want to be alone, or at least you're not in a conversation or something when you have just a moment. You just kind of let your mind flop, like you might flop onto a couch after a hard day's work. You know, there's that moment where you just kind of flop and you're just there for a moment. And it can be brief and it can be really beneficial. So mental flops throughout your day, you know, mindful flops are a great enhancement to your day. Let's also talk here about mindfulness of emotions. Because if something happens, and work, I think, is a common place, but this could be at home too, of course. If something happens that upsets you and gives rise to anger or attachment or jealousy, don't give in to ignorance. And what I mean here is don't immediately try to distract yourself, ignore what you're feeling. Because I don't think we talk about that enough, but the root of ignorance is ignore, you know, like, and that implies a little bit of active, you know, intention. You know, we're trying to ignore something. And that's what we're talking about here. You know, a lot of times when we get a negative emotion, what we do is to distract ourselves, we start to tell a story. You know, to distract ourselves from the actual feeling, we start to engage in the blaming, and we engage in just creating narratives, you know, and to try to seemingly protect ourselves. But what we're really trying to do is to not feel that raw emotion itself. So what I'm saying is, when these emotions arise, if we get in a situation where we're experiencing a negative emotion, don't linger on the story of the emotion. Just kind of sit momentarily, place your attention on the feeling, just the raw feeling of the emotion. And I mean to do this for as long as you're able, because this is not easy practice, and this is not something you should hold on to longer than you're capable. But you can start to interrupt these habitual tendencies just by even taking a minute, you know, or a couple seconds longer than you would normally. So if you would normally have that feeling and start to tell a blame story, then just take a couple extra beats to just be with that emotion. And that's a good place to start, because you start to see that you can just be with those feelings. You don't have to run away from them. Similarly, you see that there is an energy to these emotions that doesn't come up with your story. Like, your story is something you're adding to that. So just even being able to sit with those raw feelings for a moment helps you to start to see how you project your stories onto everything. And that's an important thing to gain awareness of. So when we have a negative emotion, it's possible to just sit briefly with that feeling, just being with the energy of what you feel, rather than distracting yourself with a story. And so I'm thinking now here too of, like, we often think our stories are the whole truth, and we forget that we're projecting our stories so much of the time. So I'm thinking of, there's a Lojong slogan that Trungpa Rinpoche said, is be a child, or, well, be a child of illusion is the one I think that we see most often, but Trungpa Rinpoche said it as be a sorcerer. And I love that one, because the idea is, like, a sorcerer creates illusions, but recognizes that they're his creation. So he not only recognizes that they're illusions, he recognizes that they're his creations. So we have opinions, we have memories and concepts about everything, and they're unique to us. If you think about a food that you think is just awful, you know, when you see that food, it's quite likely that you think about how awful it is at the exact same time as you name it in your mind. But those two things don't actually go together. You know, one of them is yours, and one of them is our shared, you know, concept of what that food is. So we sense our projections and we often mistake them as being tied in, you know, as part of the actual reality of things. So we need to be aware of that type of thing. And that's one of the ways why, you know, sitting with our emotion for a minute without telling a story is so useful. It's not easy. And so only do it in short spurts, as long as you're able. You can tell when you're out of your comfort zone if you begin to like space out or become a little hyper-focused on the concepts and the details. So when you can't rest with just the rawness of that emotion anymore, and it may be brief, when you need to turn to a concept, make that concept the three seeds. And what we're talking about here is the three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. And this is that aspiration that like, if it's anger, may my moment of anger contain anger of all beings. By my working through this moment of anger, may I and all beings be free of it. And may we attain enlightenment, the complete freedom from anger. So there's a concept you can add to your negative emotion. You're going to add a concept, and we will need to at some point. Make it that three seeds, three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. Running short on time, I would like to spend more time on that, but we'll have to do that another time. But so moving on. Actually, I think that I have a lot of other little ideas here, but we don't have much time. And I think that I would probably rather ask if anyone has any questions with our remaining 5 minutes. And I will try to come back with another program like this at some time in the future. Because I think gave you a lot of stuff to think about. So I apologize I didn't get all the way in through an entire mindful day's work. But I think I gave plenty to work on in a mindful day. So does anyone have any questions? In the remaining time, you're welcome, Caitlin. Thank you for being here. I will put up on the screen here now too the link to donate to Columbus KTC building project. Moving along, getting closer to being. It's a reality now. It's a building now. So we just when we can get in there is still up in the air, but. You're welcome. Thank you all. But if you'd like to help support the rebuilding process, here's the website on the screen. And I also have llamaadam.com where I keep some videos and other events, things like that. You're welcome to visit there too. Oh, you're welcome, Lindsay. Thank you. So if there aren't any questions, as we said, those four parts of a strong karma are an intention, beginning an action, completing it, and then rejoicing in it. So let's rejoice in taking the time to think about this stuff today. Let's make the aspiration that we enact some of the stuff that struck our fancy today. And let's dedicate the merit of this session for the benefit of all sentient beings. By this merit, may all beings obtain the omniscience of Buddhahood and defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thank you, everybody. See you soon. Have a great week.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.